Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. 7.5 million Americans are yearly victims of stalking. Most are women, but a lot of them are also men. And with today's technology, it's easier to stalk than ever. A two-day conference on the subject is scheduled for St. Louis later this month. Legal Services of Eastern Missouri and the St. Louis Family Violence Council are co-hosting the National Stalking Resource Center for that conference. Joining me in studio from Legal Services of Eastern Missouri's Family Law Program are Holly Yocum, Managing Attorney. Laura Halfman is Program Social Worker. Ladies, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
This is a bigger problem than I thought. Holly, I'll start with you. How big a deal is it here in this part of Missouri?
I mean, I think, Don, it's a big deal everywhere, not just in this part of Missouri. But, of course, the population we work with in eastern Missouri, we're seeing more and more cases of stalking. We handle civil legal remedies for that. So it's primarily through orders of protection and safety planning that we're helping people. But the increase has really been something notable in the last several years.
Is there a reason for the increase?
I think people are just becoming more aware of how serious stalking is. You know, reflecting on practicing, we practice with victims of domestic violence, and reflecting on that, I think there have always been sort of signs that stalking was going on, but we didn't necessarily identify it as such, as a separate sort of piece of that that power and control that someone is trying to gain. So I think just more people are aware of what it is. It's becoming, you know, a bigger problem because of bigger awareness.
Well, let's make them even more aware, Laura, in terms of defining it. How do we define it? It seems to have many different elements.
Great question. I think fundamentally, stalking is a pattern of behaviors directed at a specific person that would cause an unreasonable person to fear. So when we think about that, it can include a lot of different things, such as repeated and unwanted attention, harassment or contact by phone, mail, email. We often see a lot of cases of stalking that include a perpetrator going to a victim's home or school or work, making threats to harm that victim or the victim's family and friends. We see a lot of property damage, things like that. Or a lot of tracking on technology by their phone or computer, or even posting about that person online.
Is there a particular motive generally? I mean, is there a profile of the stalker?
You know, I think stalking can look a lot of different ways, which makes it hard to define and hard to really name. We do know that 61% of female victims and 44% of male victims who are being stalked are actually being stalked by a current or former intimate partner. So this isn't the picture in the media that we often see of, you know, the person lurking or the stranger that you don't know. It is that person you've had a relationship with that maybe won't leave you alone.
So that's kind of what the stalker is like. How about the victim? Is there a particular type of victim? I know in some domestic violence cases they will say that certain women, I hate to even say this out loud, but certain women are more susceptible to that sort of thing than others for some reason. Is that the same with stalking?
I'm not sure that that's true in either case, but I think I understand what you're saying is it seems like, you know, victims of domestic violence may experience that more than once in their lifetime. I don't know that there is the same correlation with stalking, but certainly you know, someone who has been in a relationship with that power and control, the abusive relationship with coercion, is more likely to experience stalking from that partner as part of that, you know, method of trying to control them. You know, where are you going? What are you doing? Tracking them. And especially at a time when that person tries to take a break or make a break from that relationship, the idea that, you know, they're trying to now take control of the relationship and the stalker you know, wants to know where you are and what you're doing at all times. And the only way to get that control after they've broken up is to engage in stalking behavior.
Do these instances often end with bodily harm?
They can. And certainly those are the ones that we're more likely to hear about. But frankly, a lot of the victims that I have talked to are, it's the fear and the emotional distress that they would say is more concerning, even if there has been physical harm. A lot of our clients, you know, it's the thought of what could happen, the constant worry, the constant stress that they say is worse than the physical injuries in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Laura, you work with victims, I assume, as the social worker here. Give me some sense of the kinds of things that they tell you, kind of elaborating on what Holly has just said.
Sure. In terms of the kinds of behaviors that they're...
Yeah, what they're going through, what they go through when this is happening to
them.
Right.
Well, it's certainly a lot of victims describe a loss of control, just this feeling of no matter what they do, we can't control what that stalker may do. And so just that thought of there's no way to get away, you know, especially that fear of if someone's being tracked. Not knowing if somebody has put a tracking device on your car or your phone, or just how that person may have knowledge about what you're doing.
I am making an assumption here that there have to be many occasions in which the victim don't even know they're being stalked, that a lot of this is kind of a secretive stalking.
You know, I think that's true. I've worked with victims in the past that after the fact will receive a text message saying, I saw you at the store in that red sweater. Mm-hmm. And that's almost even more off-putting if you don't know that it's happening in the moment, because then you do have that concern that it could be happening more than you realize.
There have been movies made out of just such a scenario. I know who you are and I know where you live kind of thing. And it becomes a psychological thriller.
Absolutely. And I mean, there are a lot of those movies even.
Yeah.
And I think that they do a decent job of capturing the victim's experience, that constant vigilance, you know, sitting in the bedroom, staring at the door. I mean, I have had a client who has shared that very specific fact with me. At night, I sit in my bedroom with the door closed and stare at it, hoping it won't open. You know, I think that is another thing that clients share with us, is just the idea that they are constantly being watched. The constant vigilance can be really scary and overwhelming.
One of the things that caught my eye in getting ready for this program was the notion of workplace stalking. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, does this mean within the workplace there are stalkers that you're with every day, or is it a question of a stalker coming to your workplace and harassing you or whatever?
I think it can be both. Huh. What we hear, I think, more frequently are cases that our clients, abusers, or stalkers are coming to their workplace and engaging in stalking behavior there. It's certainly, it's a hard thing to avoid. You can't just stop going to work, right? So even when you can sort of control other safety realms of your life, stay with a friend or stay with family or shop at a different store, you've got to go to work every day. So that may be the one location that your stalker knows to find you and what times you're going to be there and how to get in. If it's a public place, sure. It can be very easy for them to access you at work.
Laura, you're nodding your head in affirmation. Something you can add to that?
Sure. Just so much more complicated if it is a coworker or somebody you go to school with that is your stalker. Because as Holly mentioned, you have to continue. You have to have your livelihood. Mm-hmm. So you have to continue going to work or school. And if there's no good way to get away from that person, it makes it very difficult.
Well, I don't want to belabor this one point, but let's just say in the workplace, what would a stalker do in the workplace? You're there together anyway, presumably. What are they doing that becomes stalking?
Well, unfortunately, they may be able to get more information about you, about what you're doing outside of work, and be able to publicize that to other coworkers. They may be able to follow you after work, follow you to different events you may go to or to your home. They may be able to get more information about your family or your children and somehow try to use that against you.
And stalking isn't just that lurking behavior. It also frequently involves, you know, making specific verbal threats or, you know, by email or your workplace chat app or, you know, having access to your victim to say, here's what I know about you. Here's what I'm going to do about it.
So what is the remedy?
So we
in this particular type of case.
Yeah, sure. And I think, you know, there are two things. Number one is, you know, you can certainly make police reports. Stalking is a crime. At Legal Services, we don't handle criminal cases, but we work with our friends in the prosecutor's office and in law enforcement, you know, to help our clients make reports and access services. So there's always the possibility of criminal charges. What's what sometimes is quicker. Certainly the criminal system isn't always fast, is to get an order of protection. And a lot of people, you know, a restraining order, I think, is the way a lot of people refer to that. But there are specific remedies in the order of protection statute for stalking. A victim of stalking can obtain an order that can keep the person from coming to their home, from coming to their workplace, from coming to their school, from coming within a certain distance of them or their children, or from communicating with them at all. And that civil order of protection also has, you know, criminal penalties, but it a lot of times gives our victims a little bit of peace of mind. Mm-hmm. You know, a stalker who is afraid of the law is certainly not going to want to violate that.
Laura, I think the first step logically might be to go to the boss. Should that be the first step, or should the criminality of this be paramount?
You know, every situation is so different, honestly. Yeah. And so it really depends on what step that victim feels comfortable taking. Yeah. But we often recommend to somebody who is being stalked that remind them that they're not alone, and that it can be very helpful to reach out to their boss or employer or other coworkers and let them know that these behaviors are happening, that they're uncomfortable, and that they're frightened about what could happen next. Yeah. Sometimes getting the, you know, other coworkers or their boss to get on board and understand what they're experiencing can really help that victim get through.
Part of what they must be thinking, too, I'm sure, is you don't want to make the stalker angry. I mean, they might, whatever their motives might be, anger might not be one of them, but you don't want them mad at you and having access to you.
Absolutely. And that's why often, you know, so often with stalking, with text messaging or phone calls, somebody may say, oh, why don't you just get rid of your phone then? Mm-hmm. You know, why don't you just stop communicating? And so many of our victims, though, want to, just what you were saying, Don, of don't want to make that stalker more angry, mm-hmm. and kind of want to be able to keep tabs on what's happening, kind of where their mind may be.
Well, so you want to be able to call for help if that became necessary.
Sure. And I was going to, just following up on what Laura said, a lot of our victims feel more comfortable when they are hearing from the stalker. They know, you know, what the stalker is thinking, what they're doing, and that, you know, radio silence really can be more frightening because you assume that something worse is coming, I think, in a lot of those circumstances.
We have to take a break. We'll do that now and come back and continue our conversation. I'd like to offer the opportunity to our audience, if you'd like to get into this conversation, we'd love to have you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you'd prefer to send a tweet, do that. Then that's STL on air is the way you get to us that way. With me in studio, Holly Yocum and Laura Halfman with Legal Services of Eastern Missouri's Family Law Program. Back to continue the conversation in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Another one of the things that I learned, ladies, in getting ready for this is, and it surprised me, a large number of men, Holly, are also stalked. Should I be surprised at that?
I think that, you know, in our mind, victims come in every shape and size, race, cultural background, class. So I think that because of the movies that we were talking about earlier, the media, it tends to perceive women as victims more frequently, but certainly there is nothing, you know, particularly feminine or masculine about stalking. It is just as easy for a man to be victimized as a woman in these circumstances.
And Laura, in the same way as women? Same, are the MOs basically the same?
That's a really great question. I think some ways can be very similar in terms of unwanted communication, showing up at somebody's home, maybe unwanted gifts. Perhaps women and men, though, can be victimized in different ways. Mm. Also, just depending on a person's status, they could be victimized. You know, depending on their sexuality, on their immigration status, or other protective, qualities, that could be something that's targeted.
I guess there's no shortage of motives for this sort of thing. It can be almost anything that would trigger a stalker.
And it can be really very personal. There's Mark Kirkowski, who's a police officer in St. Louis City, is considered a local and sort of national expert on this, and he presented at something I was at recently and said one of the things about stalking that's so difficult is that the behaviors are very personal to the victim. And his example was, you know, sending someone a bouquet of flowers. For most of us, we'd look at that as a lovely gift. Mm-hmm. But there could be something about that bouquet of flowers that, because of behavior in the past or because of specific threats, is really frightening to that victim. And, you know, Officer Gierkowski's story about that really made me reflect. And as I talk to clients, sometimes the things they are telling us are things where, you know, you look at it and think, well, really? But you have to understand that it's a really personal thing, stalking is. You're often, you know, so many people know their victim that it can be really difficult to understand what they're going through.
Well, let's talk about 21st century stalking, because the internet has changed, I'm sure, the MO of a lot of people who do this sort of thing. How big an issue, Laura, has this become, and is it frequently used as a means of stalking?
Unfortunately, Don, I think it's been being used all of the time. There's just so many different ways that somebody could use these tools that are for good in a really negative way towards a victim. Things like just having basic information about your victim, like a name, birth date, social security number, is a way for a stalker to find out almost anything about somebody on the internet. There's also just so many tools now that apps that can be misused on a cell phone or on a computer that stalkers use to really track a victim's behaviors and movements.
What sort of advice would you give people who are using the internet and social media in terms of what sorts of things they should not be putting out there?
Sure. Well, I think education is really the key to for a victim to know what they can and can't do. So if you know that your stalker has had access to your phone or computer, it's really important to try to see if there's anything on that device that could be tracking your behaviors.
And it can be as simple as, you know, on Facebook or Twitter, when you check in somewhere or post a photograph, there is data that is accessible to people, sometimes the public. You know, sometimes it will just say this person was at this place. Sometimes it's a little harder to find, but anyone with some sort of technological background can find that. You can easily be tracked based on just a simple tweet that says, having a great time at the pumpkin patch, and they know exactly what pumpkin patch you are and where you're, you know, things like that can be really revealing.
I suppose there are those. Did you want to say something?
That there are easy steps, though, that people can take. Like, if you are in a breakup, or there is some weird stalking behavior going on with a different from somebody, changing your passwords online, you know, something we hear so often now, but can really be a step so that somebody can't log into your accounts. Yeah. Making sure your GPS is turned off on your phone so that if you, you know, or your photos can't be geo-tracked. Mm-hmm. Or not post, you know, making your social media accounts private.
And watching those photos, I imagine a lot of people are attracted by certain types of photos, and that could trigger a whole episode, couldn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely could.
Let's take a call. Susan is calling from Collinsville. We want to get her in. So go ahead, Susan. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, this is Susan, and I was listening to your program, and I thought I would call in. It's convenient since it's over lunch hour. But, you know, stalking can be more than just an intimate like personal dating relationship. I mean, you could have an employer that took a liking to you, let's say somebody you got off of Craigslist or so forth, and it didn't end in the right way. There could be other circumstances where the stalking continues, where they actually put spyware on your phone without you knowing about it. It's illegal, and they get all your contact information, your family, personal addresses, clients. And then they can send, they can text message and email pornography. And it becomes a pornography campaign where they take your face off of LinkedIn, could be Facebook, but off of LinkedIn, paste it on images that do belong to you, and then send these out in text messaging and emails. And all of a sudden, your community goes, wait a minute, here's your face and name attached to all this, what's going on? And then you have to go to the police, you get a detective on it. It's not traceable because they go to openmail.cc, these other networks that when they're researched, you find that they're out of New Zealand or they come from Moscow. You know, they're out of Russia. It becomes a very foreign affair and very highly complicated and layered. Then you get where they know where you live or you work, and you end up with a tire slashed. You get your car keyed because it's parked out on a lot, not protected. They throw paint on it. They find ways of destroying something, you know, maybe on your property if they can, if there are no cameras up at your residence. It has become so complex and terrifying that they have means to, if someone for some reason is holding a grudge.
Susan, let me interrupt you, and I hate to do this, but you've given us a lot to talk about, and our time is limited. But, yes, ladies, technology is great, except sometimes it's not so great.
Well, and, you know, what Susan was describing where they can get access to your phone, I think that's incredibly common. We frequently tell our clients, if this person has had physical access to your phone, you've got to be more cautious about it. And I will say, you know, one of the things Susan mentioned was the posting of images. There is a new law in Missouri going into effect in January that makes it unlawful to post certain information over the internet, homes, home addresses, social security numbers, things like that. I'm not sure that would include pornographic images, doctored or not, but you know, technology is certainly, it takes the law a while to catch up, but it certainly is.
Susan brought up so many good points and examples of things that can happen. One thing that some of our victims find very empowering is just being able to document these things, and starting to collect evidence of what is happening can really help those detectives and the police officers build a case against somebody in stalking. So that includes all, you know, any phone calls, any messages that were sent, not from you, but from this spyware, but also any property damage and things like that.
I want to shift directions a little bit here now, because as our time moves along, I'll bring in Bill, who will get us started on what to do about some of these things. Bill, go ahead. You're on the air. Bill, are you with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
All right. I hope this question doesn't sound insensitive. It seems to me that there's two kinds of stalkers, those that are ultimately capable of violence and that a court order won't stop, and those that aren't. And it's hard to distinguish one from the other early on, of course. Both kinds of stalkers are in pain and their life is out of control, either from a crush or loneliness or a breakup of a relationship. And we've all been there. We haven't all acted badly. And I was wondering what role trying to get, you know, a court order won't stop somebody who doesn't care anymore. But I was wondering what role trying to get these people who are doing the stalking counseling for the issues they're going through plays in the journey to stop the harassment.
Thanks, Bill. We'll talk about that. What about the counseling availability?
I mean, Bill's right that a court order is just a piece of paper. But in those proceedings, they can order counseling for stalkers. Under the statute, they can order batterer's intervention, which is a little bit different, counseling or substance abuse treatment. And, you know, we see that happen with some frequency when it's appropriate. So those are options through the civil order of protection process. And I think they were put there specifically to address the concerns that Bill was expressing.
What other resources are out there available, Laura, for people who are victims?
Absolutely.
Particularly through your organization. Yeah.
So St. Louis is very fortunate to have such a wide network of organizations that work on these issues. So Legal Services of Eastern Missouri can offer free civil legal representation for victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking. So we can help with those orders of protection, but also divorce and custody cases where stalking might be involved. We have social workers on staff as well to help connect clients to other resources that might be helpful, such as free counseling agencies in the area, connections to prosecutors and victim service advocates in those offices.
We also have other areas of law that can be impacted by a stalker, consumer cases, housing cases. I mean, it's possible for a stalker to really infiltrate all parts of a person's life. So we have some holistic legal representation available, but we also have great connections to other resources if a person needs shelter, counseling, things like that. And you can go to our website at lsem.org, which is where you can see how to get a case started with us and possibly access some other resources linked through our pages.
We will put a link to your website on ours at stlpublicradio.org. I don't have time to take this call, but we have someone in Maryland Heights wants to know about hiring a private detective. That's another option, I guess.
It sure is. And that's, I mean, Laura mentioned, you know, collecting evidence for prosecutors and police. Certainly, if that's something someone has the resources and connections to do, it cannot hurt if it helps them feel more secure. And I think victim-centered steps are what we want to encourage, whatever makes the victim feel safer.
The event that I mentioned at the top is the National Stalking Resource Center Conference, which is going to be held from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. on October 20th and 21st at the St. Louis Community College Corporate College on McKelvey Road in Bridgeton. Mm-hmm. Laura, did you want to add, who is that for? I mean, are they for victims or for whom?
Sure. So we're really targeting advocates, law enforcement, probation and parole, other interested parties that are working with victims. Certainly victims could come as well to learn more. But right now we're so fortunate to have the National Stalking Resource Center coming to speak to us. We've got Mark Kurkowski, who is a detective of the DART unit, which is the Domestic Abuse Response Team with the St. Louis City Police Department, coming in. He's a speaker with the Stalking Resource Center. He's coming as well as two other speakers to come share with us more detailed information about how to best serve victims in our area.
All right. Well, I want to thank you both for being with us and talking about all of this. Any final thought you want to leave us with before we say goodbye, Holly?
If victims are experiencing this, we hope they feel safe enough to call for help.
All right. Anything, Laura?
Absolutely. Those victims are not alone, and there's ways to get out of these situations.
All right. Well, thanks to Holly Yocum and Laura Halfman with Legal Services of Eastern Missouri Family Law Program for being with us today. A reminder, the National Stalking Resource Center Conference held October 20th and 21st at St. Louis Community College's Corporate College on McKelvey Road in Bridgeton from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. each day. Thank you. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.